It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosie.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosie.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show that sounds like a sports show in the 70s, here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sosey. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. And we have a blog, which you can check out at
filmsociology.tumblr.com.
The voice you just heard, Kobe Slagle.
Yep.
Also a fan of 70s rollicking film soundtracks. This soundtrack, not a pot boiler.
No?
No. Very cool stuff.
What's this to?
This is The Warriors.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
yeah, I've not inflicted The Warriors on you yet. I think you will like it. It is, I think for me, it's more adventurous, suspenseful, and less homoerotic than 300. Similar storyline.
Okay.
I know that's a selling point for you.
That was on the posters.
In the reissue, yeah. But anyway, I will add that to your What Is Kobe Watching account. Although now that we're up to our knees.
I feel like we really need to be keeping track of that because... It's like every week, it's, oh, we'll add that to your pile. We'll add that to your pile.
I already know what's on your pile to begin with, because there's a couple films I need to get back eventually because I need to show them to Emma. Just saying. So, anyway.
What, Troll 2?
No, well, maybe. But, I mean, on Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Oh, yes.
And I think you still have Get Shorty? Or Out of Sight?
I don't know.
Might have to change. Do you have my movies in a special place now that you've moved into your new house?
Not yet. Moving Monday.
Oh, you're moving Monday.
Well, congrats.
This is the family portion of the film show. Kobe and his lovely wife Bianca. And I'll get to my guests in a moment. They star in an imaginary sitcom that we have created called "I Love You, Your Team Sucks."
Yep.
and I think it's a very special episode because you're moving into the new house. So don't lose my films, please.
I won't.
Okay. Well, let me know when you get, because I will give you a piece of advice. Mark Dubeck is here with me, and he can back me up on this. You will reach a point where boxes will be on a need-to-open basis.
Absolutely.
So, you know, clothing,
can you even hear me here?
Clothing, yeah. Towels, kitchen stuff, and then everything else, like, I don't feel like it. Now, I don't know how fair Sweet Bianca is as far as moving stuff, and you know, but... Yeah, there's still boxes in the house I've been at for 3 years I haven't opened yet.
You've been there 3 years?
Yes.
Wow.
We have been there for 3 years.
I did not realize I had been there.
Penrod is always a calendar point because we moved in. We moved out east right before Penrod.
Oh. Well, so then it has been 3 years.
It has been 3 years. Did I stutter?
We've been here for 14 years, there are boxes that...
You still haven't opened?
Yeah, we actually moved here.
Are they yours or are they hers, or is it both?
I've actually looked in there. They're old beta tapes from TV, and then they're like our college diploma, and so, I mean, we share one diploma. No, but both of our, yeah.
Don't you know when you get diploma.
That's right.
We worked hard on that. Right.
I now pronounce you man and wife, and here's your diploma.
Yeah, those boxes you just, you know, I'm not sure what we're saving them up for, but they're there.
Because you never know. You never know when you might need them. Lynn still gives me sitcom wife look when I still have Rolling Stone copy issues from the 1980s because I want that Springsteen interview. Sorry, can't find it on. Could probably find it online. Don't want to. It's right here. It's like I have a thing with my lovely wife where she will be watching a movie on cable on network television that is edited and has commercials. Oh, I come in, I'm like, honey, it's downstairs. But she doesn't want to go downstairs and start it from the very beginning. So anyway.
It's right here. It's
yeah,
right here.
It's exactly. I say that. I think that's one of the things I say a lot besides, yes, dear, it's downstairs. But it doesn't really matter. And Kobe?
What?
Take note. Mark Dubeck is hanging out with us. How are you, sir?
I'm excellent. Thank you. It's great to be here on this wonderful
day.
Yeah. And it's good to be with you. Nice
and
to see you.
Always good to have you here. And as a reminder, don't rant and drive at the same time, no matter who you root for.
Oh,
that's just,
yes.
That's just a bad idea.
No.
I just kept waiting for the guy to – I was just waiting for the film to abruptly end when he plows into some car.
Now, I wonder, was that the first of his doing that rant?
I wouldn't be surprised if there's a series.
Rant,
isn't
right?
Isn't there a whole page devoted to just Brown fans screaming?
I don't know, but I'm going to tell you, and I'm not kidding. I was actually at that game. I'm a Browns fan, and was in Pittsburgh for that game. And at halftime, ooh, I believe that rant, which we're talking about, which was posted virally, went out, was at halftime.
Yeah, because he
was
probably came
so he left in disgust.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know what the situation was.
Maybe he was at
home and he was driving home from his buddies.
All right.
But he basically went off on the whole organization and on their draft and the coach,
Jimmy Haslam.
And that's a lot how we were talking. Probably not that aggressive or.
And you were driving.
And then the big turnaround after halftime, but still end up with a loss like usual. But anyways, no one wants to hear about Cleveland football here. I know that for sure.
Wait a minute. Now, actually, I was going to ask you about draft day.
Okay.
Did you saw it? Fair Cleveland cinematic representation?
That's great. I'm glad you asked this because
that's
why we
hit the hard questions here at Film Sociology.
I'm from Cleveland, and also, by the way, I'm a film critic, markdubeck.com, and used to be on TV and whatnot. If you're wondering why I'm here,
because we often start with the sports and cooking portion of the film show.
I just
want
to let people know who I am. Who's this guy talking?
Yeah, markdubeck.com.
But I've been a film critic for a long time, and I have stuff on thr.com as well as my website. But anyway.
Yes.
I'm more of a Browns fan than a film critic, probably, because it's so passionate to my heart. But the draft day, when I first saw it, I was so excited because, first of all, I like Kevin Costner sports films, and then it's about my team.
Right.
I think that it was a little bit, I think being a Browns fan, the first time I saw it, I liked it. Like when I looked back at my review, I think it was a little more glowing. I just rewatched it when it came out on DVD with my daughter. I wanted to kind of show her the pain that her father's been through.
The agony.
I don't do that
with my daughter. As a Lions fan, I just have my daughter punch me in the head for 3 hours every Sunday.
Well, I do that to myself. So,
right.
But the thing is, the second time around, I saw a little more, a few more weak spots, and I didn't find it as good of a film the second time. In fact, I didn't feel like there was enough of a backstory on the history of the Browns and stuff. So.
Right. My problem with the film, and this is kind of a weird problem to have with it, but because it was sanctioned by the NFL.
Sure.
So you really could, and by the way, Roger Goodell's cameo in Draft Day is probably the highlight of his year right now. That's not, and he's booed in the film, if you hear him when he comes on, because they actually filmed during an actual draft. But because it was sanctioned, I think it could have been a lot. I think it's a little more cutthroat behind the scenes. You get that a little bit in the last third, maybe, of the picture when it gets to the evening. I think there's too much backstory with Costner. As much as I love him getting Jennifer Garner pregnant, but the segment with and I love Ellen Burstyn, but the scenes with her mother and burying the ashes and of course if that wasn't in there, this film would be, as my daughter would call it, men in suits talking.
Yeah,
and
it was disconnected, especially the second time around. It felt like
the NFL Draft 101. And obviously, because you had these sweeping shots of a city, and it would say Cleveland, and in case you didn't know, home of the Browns, Seattle, home of the Seahawks.
Yeah.
This is really, I think it plays to a mall crowd that knows nothing about sports.
And the worst part is looking at it and all the pieces, I believe all the pieces were there for an excellent sports film. They just didn't put it together the right way. It didn't work out because the story with his father being the coach, it was interesting. This kind of didn't really connect throughout the story. Mm-hmm. There wasn't enough. It was too quick.
Yeah. And about the pick itself, Because there was, you know, in the film, there is, you have to get this guy. The coach wants this guy. The team, by the way, no owner is like Frank Langella. He already played a sports owner once in Eddie. But
why is Frank Langella, why is he always wearing glasses?
Why
sunglasses?
Is it? Because it makes him look cool. Oh,
okay. That was something I didn't notice till the second time, too. I'm like, when he was talking to Goodell, actually.
There's only three types of people that wear sunglasses indoors. I think we all know this punchline, blind people.
Mm-hmm.
And Rod Piazza, he's a blues musician. Look him up. But the whole this one's flashier. But no, Costner wants to draft this guy because he has a gut instinct.
Feeling, right? We all know. And by the way, they do that a lot with the Browns, and that's why we always lose because gut instincts don't work. You don't do that.
But at least there's not the YouTube clip of I remember ESPN did this on SportsCenter, the montage of Jets fans. With
Remember,
as soon as they mention either the school or the position, you hear them going, no! So,
kind of related, not really.
That's late. Never stopped this show, you know
that,
right?
Yeah. So we're allowed to jump where we want to go, good, because I got stuff I want to talk about.
Get off your chest.
Yeah, I do, I really do.
The Roger Goodell booing. I watched a little bit of the real draft this year.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot. Did not see draft day, but does he receive a David Stern-esque booing, or is Stern booing louder and more boisterous than Goodell?
That's
booing?
A good question. You know what? I guess I'll say what Roger said last week. I didn't see the tape.
hey, that was good. Nice time.
No, I there is a little bit. I don't think it's as loud as Stern's. Stern got it every year.
And he's been
I think that's more intense. I think the Goodell's in more of good nature, especially in the movie. It's more of like, you know, like more of a fun thing, whereas Stern was like a little more direct, I believe.
Yeah, so I think now Goodell is also watching Draft Day to find out the reaction that came over his appearance.
Yeah, I'm going to go on record right now as saying that I believe that we are just on the surface level of what's going to happen with this Ray Rice.
Oh, yeah. That's
and Goodell, I mean, did you see his interview yesterday? I mean,
was there an 18-and-a-half-minute gap, like
Watergate?
He looked
scared to death, and his answers were just, you could tell he was just thinking of what to say. And I just feel like this is just going to get delved into further and further. He won't be, I mean, it's just going to be, this isn't over.
Far from over. And so, this will probably be eventually a 30 for 30 documentary, which we'll bring you back on and talk about that.
Okay. All right. See, I'm not allowed to jump around wherever I want to go. See?
That's all right.
I want to talk about the new iPhone, too. But
this isn't technology sociology.
Are you sure? Although
we have cooking and fantasy football portions of the show, but not today.
Okay.
We'll move on.
I can. All right, thank you.
Opening in theaters today, we have Dolphin Tale 2.
Ooh. Still dolphins.
Still dolphins.
Still swimming.
Not about Ryan Tannehill. I remember this has a weird place because I think this was the first film the Soucy family saw after we moved into our new digs. I might be wrong on this.
Dolphin Tale has been 3 years ago?
Or maybe two, something like that. But I guess to ask the question: Were there questions left unanswered from the first Dolphin Tale? Didn't we know the dolphin was Kaiser Soze and he swims off with Pete Postlethwaite, who's now dead? So I don't know if we really needed a second one. And then we also have the thriller No Good Deed, the home invasion thriller. Now, Kobe, home invasion thrillers not up your alley?
How is home invasion a thrill? In what world is home invasion a thrill?
A thriller is what I was saying.
Yeah, I don't know.
But is that something that is not in your
no.
So no. But so you're lumping it in the same thing as above, so below.
Yes.
Okay, just checking.
I'm pretty sure that anybody that has their own home doesn't want to see that movie. Those are the movies that scare me more than anything. Are the realistic ones? It's like, why would I want to watch something that could possibly happen?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mark.
Yes.
Did you hear that?
Yeah, I heard him.
Yep.
Let me sip from my mug.
I stand I by that, and I can think of a bunch that were released. I don't remember all their names, but one was with Michael. What's his name? Michael Pitt, I believe. And I don't.
Funny Games.
And there was another one where with Liv Tyler, where they wore bags over their heads.
Yes, that one.
I refused to watch those though because I read what it was about. I'm like, that sounds awful.
The original Straw Dogs is out of the question, I guess.
No, the ref is different with Dennis Leary. They sort of. I'm not exactly sure what happened. It was a home invasion, but there was no violence.
But yeah, Ted Demme, them being tied up and yelled at by Dennis Leary. That's not violent.
Yeah, that was more fun.
But that's a Ted Demme picture on that. Okay, but opening in theaters today is the crime drama The Drop, and it's known for a few things. It is a screenplay is done by Dennis Lehane, who Also, it's based on his short story, and he's taken his angst of Boston and moved it to New York City this time. This is the guy, of course, who wrote Mystic River, Gone Baby Gone, Shutter Island. The film is also known because this was the last performance from James Gandolfini, and he's in this as well. The film also stars Tom Hardy, Noomi Rapace, for you fans of the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Matthias Schoenaerts, I hope I'm saying that right.
No, probably close.
Belgian actor, which we'll get to in a little bit. But the story itself is a bar in New York City, and you get it into this fascinating look at what are called drop bars, where money is dropped into a certain area and it is held for a while and it is picked up by other questionable businessmen, I guess is a good way of putting it.
Yeah, I was not aware that they existed or they were called that, so it was kind
right.
of an introduction to that whole
and,
thing.
And in a place like New York, they're all over the city and they're not used consistently, and it's just an understanding done between bar owners and questionable businessmen. And Hardy plays a bartender at one of these places. Gandolfini plays his cousin who used to own the place, but now it's run by Chechen businessmen.
Chechen, I'm glad you got that right.
Yes, because there's a segment on that talks about the pronunciation of that. But at least not Italian.
Sure.
So
no, yeah, that was a difference. Yeah.
And so it's what happens when those two worlds collide. Because, of course, in a crime film like this, not everything can go smooth. So, Mark, your thoughts on the picture. You got to see it the other night.
Yeah, you know, I checked it out, and I will tell you what. This movie is, you know, if you just see the trailer, you know, it looks like something that everybody might like, you know, given the fact with James Gandolfini, and he's in a gangster role, and just sort of it just looks like something that, like, wow, I need to see that. And that was my thought. However, you know, I kind of liken this film to a Radiohead song. And what I mean by that
really
is you have to be patient with it.
Yep.
And there are a lot of odd dialogue sequences, odd character.
Mm-hmm.
Just the whole thing. It feels unsettling at times. You're not sure where it's going. It doesn't feel like it's a good movie at certain times. But if you're patient, there's a huge payoff. And I believe that even with you know, watching it again, like with a Radiohead song, you need to listen to it a couple times to appreciate it. This is one of those films I think that true film lovers will enjoy.
Now, are you going to eventually watch this while listening to Radiohead?
That's
Wizard of Oz and Dark Side of the Moon.
I think if you do that, you'll find it perfectly, because there's a lot of silence in the film. But I'd also say, without a doubt, the one thing that makes the movie work, I wish I could say James Gandolfini, which he was very good, but, you know, nothing that, not like, I don't feel like it was as good as Enough Said, which was his other last performance.
Yeah, that's a fine performance.
This was okay, but Tom Hardy, like, mm-hmm. I can't take my eyes off that guy on the screen. I mean, not because of looks, by the
Angela,
way.
You're fine. Don't worry about
yeah,
it.
No. His performance is understated, and he's just the guy's a great actor, and I just love everything he does. In Locke, for example,
yep,
which is a totally
great.
Different
one of my
thing.
Favorite films of
right.
the year.
I just love the way he speaks. I mean, I just love everything about the guy's amazing, and he delivers here, and I couldn't have been more happy with his performance, and ultimately it makes the movie what it is for me.
I'm glad you brought up as far as the tone. That's the other thing. We were talking about this at the press screening the other night, the other day, I should say. It is an atmospheric film, and I think there's going to be elements of the mall crowd, like you said, because Gandolfini's in it, because this is his last film, and this is a plight with an actor like James. If an actor like James Gandolfini is in a film that involves crime, everybody's going to compare it to Sopranos.
Right.
Just like a couple of weeks ago, you have a film with Pierce Brosnan with a gun. Everybody's going to compare it to James Bond.
Sure.
Not fair.
Perfect.
But as you said, this is atmospheric. So it takes its time. There are, like an Elmore Leonard novel, there are moments that are just dialogue amongst characters, and it doesn't always move the plot. You'll get there. As you said, be patient. You'll get to a climax. It doesn't turn into a big, dumb action movie, thankfully.
Sure.
But there is a build. The Tom Hardy character at first, and I was intrigued to see him play a schlub. And he does kind of have that feeling of it at the beginning. And that's the other thing, is the choices that Tom Hardy makes. I think, gone in the complete opposite direction after playing Bane. With a film like Locke, which, as I said, is one of my favorite films of the year, and then doing something like this, where it looks like as he says in the beginning of the film, I just tend the bar. That's all he does. And I started getting little flashbacks of On the Waterfront, where the Terry Molloy character by Marlon Brando doesn't want to get involved, doesn't want to make waves. But as we find out, he eventually has to make some waves.
And throughout the film, I question his character. Is he not intelligent? Is he slow? Like,
right.
There are all these things. And then I would change my mind, and I'm back again.
Right.
And quite frankly, when I get all the way through, I'm still not exactly sure what some of his motivation was and exactly who he is, which I think that might be a good thing.
Yeah, and in this case, it was cracking us up. At the credits, we find out that this is based on a Dennis Lehane short story called Animal Rescue.
Right, yeah.
And there is a subplot involving Hardy's character rescuing a dog, but it's a little more than that. But
yeah.
But there are moments of him with the dog, him bantering with Noomi Rapace, who plays and by the way, folks, relax. Yes, you have a Swedish actress, an English actor, and a Belgian actor all playing New Yorkers. It's fine.
Yeah,
it's not distracting at all.
It actually works, not at all. I mean, in fact, I know I knew that she was, and I was aware of that, and it didn't bother me at all.
But Matthias Schoenaerts, who played,
Matthias
Schoenaerts, I hope I'm saying it, he plays an ex-boyfriend of Rapace's character.
That guy was great.
But I forgot that he was also in Black Book. He was also in Rust of Bone of Marion Cotillard, so kind of a Euro that guy. But he really creepy as a guy who becomes an adversary of Hardy's character, first about the dog, then about the girl, and then there's other things.
I think this is one of those performances from that gentleman who I don't know his name, because he stood out. Like, in fact, I looked up his name when I got home. I still can't pronounce it. Who
is this guy?
And I thought he played crazy real good.
Yeah. and with Hardy's character, and there's even as the film goes on, it unravels a little bit more about his past with the bar, his past with Gandolfini. And then we get to a moment, like I said, where there is an action climax, but it's not
huge. Which
is not
what you'd expect. It's not big budget, like you said.
No, it's not. And the film also captures, which I really dug about this, and I think Lehane does a good job with this with his other writing, captures the paranoia of the neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
where everybody knows everybody's business, and everybody knows, for the most part, to stay out of everybody else's business. There is a robbery at the beginning of the film, and, of course, the people whose money that was supposed to go to, they want it back by any means necessary. And we've heard this story. We've heard this plot line before, but It's done in a nuanced way. It's done in a subtle way. Again, it's not totally plot driven. It gets there, but you have to be patient.
Yep. And I really, what was the director's name? I mean, I know he's Michael Roskam.
Right. Okay. And he had an Oscar nominated, I think, a foreign film a couple years
Bullhead
back.
Or something like that.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But the thing about it is I really liked his pacing. He had just enough odd for me. Like you know what, I'm kind of in the middle, you know, between a normal film goer and somebody that's really into the more arty films.
Right.
I feel like this kind of walks the line a little of that. And I liked the way he paced the film. It was actually short. It was only like
it's
an
probably hour and a half maybe.
Or, yeah.
So yeah, the hour 40.
So you know, it didn't go on and it kind of wrapped up nicely. You know, I don't ever like to give away too much about a movie, but there are two moments in this film where it completely leaves you like guessing about, you know, and happened the ending actually.
Nice last moment.
Yeah. So there's, in fact, yeah, that's one of those things. You know, I wanted to actually talk to somebody right after screening it, but everybody shuffled out and I didn't know anyone. Chris Lloyd was there, but he ran out in front of me, so I didn't.
Okay.
Because it was one of those moments where you want to talk about a movie when you leave, and that doesn't mm-hmm. always happen, other than to say that was terrible. But you know, this is one of those movies that it was just like I really wanted to discuss it with him. So now I get to do it with you.
Ta-da!
Ah,
and by the way, folks, this is the thing. When the critics all get together and watch stuff, we don't always huddle up in a group with a dry erase board and break down, but we kind of look around. There are moments where if it's something that we think is going to be universally praised or universally panned, and you kind of look around to see if everybody has the same look on your face. And
sure.
If that's the case, wow. Technology at work, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. It's a bad phone.
Doing a show here, everybody. Wow. I'm working.
Could be a pizza order. They're calling us. It's here.
Very good.
Thank you.
That's terrific. So, we don't always huddle up and discuss how things went. Could you get that? WFYI, working there. Okay. Jeez.
Stand by for one second. Matt's going to handle it.
I'm going to take this. Yeah. This is great.
And I will just talk about Tom Hardy and his poor. No, okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, the whole thing with Gandolfini, by the way, is that, you know, this is not Tony Soprano, like Matt said, and I think that, you know, a lot of people could be disappointed with that. So just go knowing this is a different New York gangster.
Yeah, it is.
And I guess I sensed a little bit of, I love The Sopranos, and I just rewatched that recently.
And I'm still a guy, I still love the ending. I don't care what y'all think.
Right, I agree. I do too. But I guess, you know, if I'm being honest, I have to say maybe that, you know, being his last performance, it wasn't that it wasn't good. It's just that, like you said, he's not the big tough guy boss. It's smarter than everybody.
And I know that's kind of why
he's a loser.
I'm sure that's kind of why he picked it, because it was a contrast. And also working with Tom Hardy. And as you find out, especially in the second half of the film, there is a nice twist involving his character, which you've seen several times before. But between that, the contrast of what he is known for and working with Hardy, those are probably the reasons why he took this. And I can understand that.
Hey, as far as last films go, I know he didn't know that going in.
Of course.
I would say it's a pretty good, he could have been in Dolphin Tale too. So that's
nobody wants that.
And, you know, the only question I couldn't figure, I looked last night. I was curious if he completed the film in full or if they had to end it because he passed away. I would like to find that out.
I thought he did finish it.
Did he finish it?
I think so.
Well, I mean, there are reasons why I asked that. But anyway, so.
Well, if you're Oliver Reed in Gladiator, and you just retouch up scenes that he was in before.
Sure.
That's happened with other actors.
I'll research that and get back to
you. Okay, that's good. Okay. So that is, so definitely go check out The Drop. That was, and trust me, we are kind of in that area. I think we were spoiled with, August is usually a dumping ground for movies, and I think we were spoiled with Guardians of the Galaxy and Boyhood. And now we're just kind of waiting for the grown-up Oscar contenders to start popping up.
Yeah, that's my question to you now. I know it's early. Is this an Oscar film? Are there any Oscar-worthy performances?
No, not well. You know what? We have a group meeting because you start jotting down names, and you know, by the time it gets to be November, there's like 35 names on it. So I would say, I think next week I'm going to try to actually pronounce this correctly. But Matthias Schoenaerts, probably maybe for Best Supporting Actor, but I don't see that happening by the end. I'm saying this because it's September, November, December, maybe.
If I'm going over the last few years, which is impossible to predict what's coming out here, shortly we can't do that. However, I mean, I'm saying based on what's been out this year, like you just named my favorite two films as well, Guardians of the Galaxy and Boyhood. So I mean, to me, that's like been the cream of this year so far. This movie is right up there with them. So it's like, for me, and not only that, I feel like the Tom Hardy performance could win him an Oscar if he gets the right buzz here. It came out early. This is early. This is, again, an early buzz.
Yeah.
Or he could just fade away behind some other big performance.
And he'll do some, and then he will work on something else that will be just really cool.
I mean, I think he's so good in everything, so it's hard to say. But I mean, I really, when I look at this, it's such a puzzling character and puzzling performance. It could remind people of like an early De Niro.
Or Brando
on
the waterfront,
like
kind of.
So,
yeah.
I don't know. I'll be interested to see how this builds up as we go forward.
Yeah,
so.
I really dig Tom Hardy. And like, and please go rent Locke. It's out there. Go rent it. You can't take your eyes off the guy. Of course, you have no choice. It's mostly about him in a car. But it's fast. It's a fascinating
performance. I wanted to know so much more, you know. But that, I guess that's part of the charm of the film, you know. And his voice, which is funny to people who don't know, he's, you know, has an accent.
Right.
But it's Bane's voice just spoken more.
See, I don't know if it's really like Bane's voice, because the first time I saw Dark Knight, I thought it sounded like every Zoo Crew's impression of Sean Connery. You know, every wacky morning radio show has like a bad Sean Connery impression, and that's what I felt.
Well, he has a unique accent, won't you agree? But Bane, it's not the same as Bane. It's the same wording, but his voice is completely different.
Yeah, because it's a little, I think Hardy even put on weight for Locke, even though he's mostly shot from the shoulders up. I can't do that. That's why I keep it 24/7.
Another interesting note about talking about Hardy.
Right.
And I'm curious about this, and again, I'll research this. I noticed in this film a couple tight shots, his teeth were really bad. And that's interesting for an A-list actor, if he's not too. And I was wondering if he did that. And
no,
like,
I think there's you can get. You can get teeth fixings.
I found that very, because there was only a couple scenes, but I picked up on it because his face was so.
Because when you, if you put something in there, if you put a plate or you put in a false tooth or something, that also adjusts your speech pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Because you got it's like the old, you know, when Brando put cotton in his jaws, that adjusted the way he spoke. By the way, I'm rehearsing a play, so I know all this stuff. That's mid-October. No. You're fine. Couple other film notes coming around Indiana. September 14th through the 16th, of course, it is Kevin Kline Weekend at IU Cinema. He's getting an honorary degree, an honorary doctorate at IU Auditorium on the 14th. And then at 2 o'clock, then they're showing A Fish Called Wanda, which he won Best Supporting Actor for, and rightly so. And then there will be screenings of Silverado on the 14th, My Old Lady, which is the other new film he's got. He's playing Errol Flynn in another picture. My Old Lady is September 14th at 6:30 p.m. And then the Ang Lee film The Ice Storm on the 16th at 7 p.m. So you can go to cinema.indiana.edu for a big Kevin Kline weekend.
Your favorite Kevin Kline film is
Fish Called Wanda. It's funny. It's he's part of an ensemble, and he's amazing as Otto in Wanda. I remember that was the film. It was the summer of '88. I just graduated from high school, going into college, and there were two films that if I didn't know somebody had not seen it, I would grab their wrist and drag them to the movie to see that film. One was A Fish Called Wanda. The other was Midnight Run. And I remember getting really hammered Oscar night when Kevin Kline won. I was so happy for them. My buddy Laura Jansen and I have a bit now where if there's something that we're really passionate about, a particular category, if it doesn't win, party's over. Everybody leave. And for Kevin Kline to win that, it was like the 84 Tigers. I mean, he hit the ground running, never let up. There was just no doubt he was going to win that because he was so damn funny in that picture. Do you have a favorite?
I hate to admit it, but I have to agree with you. I mean, I like all, you know, he's just one of those actors that
he always brings something interesting, even if it's something like Wild Wild West or, those pictures. I love The Big Chill. And The Big Chill just came out on.
I was going to say The Big Chill, but there's so many actors in there. He was kind of a piece of a big ensemble.
The Big Chill just got re-released on Blu-ray by Criterion. And that's a film I still tell people, Jeff Marker, this one's for you. Jeff Marker is my colleague from the Gainesville Times who once nostalgia is not one of his favorite aspects. But I think The Big Chill is a film that needs to be watched every 5 years because I remember going with my parents to see it when it first opened. I was 13. And as a 13-year-old, I got that the performances were strong. I got to see what looked like a myriad of people, whether they were successful, like the Kevin Kline character, or a bit of a screw up, like the William Hurt character, and everybody. So you got to see a range of emotional stability between those actors, and the fact that they are comforting each other over a long weekend because Kevin Costner's character, even though you don't see him, died. And then seeing it again, and of course the great dialogue. Seeing it again when I'm 18, I got something different out of it. Seeing it when I started dating somebody, I got something out of it. When I got married, when I had a child, and as you get older, I think you get something different out of it because of your own life experiences. I'm curious, when was the last time you saw The Big Chill?
Yeah, you know what? Now that you're just saying this, I actually am just coming off a reunion of the Browns Steelers game with my friends from junior high school and high school.
Really?
So everybody, there's a guy that went to Yale.
Hopefully, you don't have William Hurt in your group.
No, but well, yes, actually, that's Jeff. But no, everybody different levels of success. Some going through divorce, some happily, myself happy, right now for the most part. But it was interesting to gather again. And some of us hadn't seen each other in 20 years.
Wow.
So now that you say that, I do want to rewatch it because it's probably been 6, 7, 8 years since I've seen it. So that is something I'd be interested in because I think you're right about it. I think when I was younger and I saw it, I couldn't quite connect with some of what was going on, because it was – I hadn't experienced it yet or whatever. So now
you have two homework assignments.
That's right. I can't wait.
That's right.
It's raining out.
And, so by the way, the answer is yes, it will be on the final. also, we have it's on a movie screen, but I'm still going to plug it. September 16th, 7 p.m., Shakespeare Globes Theater. They're going to be doing a performance of Twelfth Night featuring Stephen Fry and Mark Rylance, and that's at Keystone Arts. Also, at various locations, there will be a screen of one of the Fathom stage performances of A Streetcar Named Desire with Vanessa Kirby, Ben Foster, and I'm really excited about this, Gillian Anderson. who I believe is playing Blanche in that production. So
I do like her.
Very cool. Yeah, me too, for different reasons. No, probably similar reasons.
Yep.
I can hear my wife rolling her eyes.
There's a show on Netflix with her in it that she stars as a detective.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm well aware of that.
Okay. Right. I just didn't, I haven't started watching it yet, but that was the reason I was going to watch it.
Cool. Also, September 14th and the 17th at AMC Showplace 17, they're showing Good Will Hunting for obvious reasons because of Mr. Williams' work. And Christoph Zanussi is, that's the 12th and 13th, at part of the Martin Scorsese Presents Masterpieces of the Polish Cinema series down at IU Cinema. Again, cinema.indiana.edu for more information on that. All right, moving on to the video store. Here's Mark Dubeck is here with me, markdubeck.com, and I'm here because I'm the host. Just a little insight as far as my approach to watching films. Once a film opens, if I didn't see it, and I'll tell you why I'm doing this. Once a film opens and I didn't get a chance to see it, I more than likely 99% of the time am not going to be able to see it in the theater because I am focusing on what is opening up the following week. Once it's out there, there's nothing I can do about it. Sure. So there's a part of me that's like, well, I will catch it out. I will catch it when it comes out on DVD and Blu-ray. And that is the case this week because I was ill when this film came out, and now it's out. And this was the first big because summer blockbusters now start in May. And the big title this week is Captain America, The Winter Soldier.
And Matt, thank you for saying that. We haven't discussed this before, but the exact same thing happened to me.
You were ill?
I was
hopefully
on vacation.
Not for the same
I was
reason.
On vacation when it came out. So you know how we do
week to week.
I do the same thing. I watch the film the week before it comes out. So if it gets past me, it gets past
what,
me until it's on
what
video.
Location trumped Captain America?
I've had several vacations. I don't remember. It was either Aruba or, I don't know, a golf trip with guys.
You just made everybody nauseous. Way to go.
I've had quite a summer, actually.
Watching Captain America in Aruba.
Yeah, well, I think it might have been a golf trip, but whatever the reason.
No, too late. We're revisionist history. We're now saying you went to Aruba.
When was it released?
Angela, where were we in May?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It could have been a lot of places.
But it is. Well,
I go solo trips as well, so.
Solo trips?
I mean, I go on golf trips.
Oh, right, the golf outings.
Yeah.
We have the second Captain America film from Marvel Pictures. What has happened since the last one is we've kind of we know he's unfrozen and we're out of the 40s.
Sure.
So he is in modern America and there's new villains. You do see a lot more Scarlett Johansson. Not that way. And Sam Jackson's got more of a pivotal role this time around. But there's a new soul. There's a new villain. There's a new hero popping up, played by Anthony Mackie, and a really fun piece of stunt casting to play your villain. And I don't think I'm really giving much away because it came out in May. But Robert Redford's really fun to watch in this picture. I was concerned watching this because I had such a good time watching Guardians of the Galaxy. Was my enjoyment of Guardians going to mar my enjoyment of Captain America because of what I saw first? And for the most part, it did not. Is it as rollicking and funny as Guardians? No. You got plenty of action. You got some cool action sequences. You got some decent acting, some fine acting. I think it is an action-packed final third of the film, that probably could have used a little tightening up for my part. But overall, pretty satisfying.
Well, here's the thing. I actually haven't had a chance to check it out yet. So that I appreciate. But here's a question I have for, I bet everyone out there that, rent films, I know myself, if you're thinking of watching something, do you need to see the first one? If you really want to watch a movie and there isn't
right.
great releases this week, can you just, step up and watch this?
I think you can. I mean, there's little moments that happens. Like, there's one character from his past who's now... she's bedridden and old, and there's a moment where they're going through an old computer warehouse, and there's a picture of Tommy Lee Jones, who was in the first film,
sure.
on a picture. So if you know those, but no, I think you can see this film in and of itself.
That's always interesting because I actually the first film, I really was surprised and really liked it. I was thinking,
I think part of it was we had come across some not so great superhero movies prior to that. So
Green
the fact
Lantern,
that we so the fact that we got to see something that was pretty cool, that helped.
And then like I said, I heard this is a big upgrade and the villain's really good and stuff like that. So I mean, I'm looking forward to it, but I know a lot of people out there will looking for something to rent. I guess
well, there's plenty of them out there. And from a completely nerd standpoint, Kobe, you'll appreciate this. The second Captain America film does allude to Marvin Gaye's music from Trouble Man, which we did first years and years and years ago. So we got up on one up on Marvel Studios with that. But I love seeing Redford in this because for the mall crowd, for you young people, come sit at Uncle Matthew's feet. I'm going to talk to you. Redford, of course, being one of the iconic actors of the last 50 years, but of course made a number of fantastic political espionage thrillers in the 1970s. Films like 3 Days of the Condor. He was great as Bob Woodward. And I wish all reporters looked like Robert Redford in 1975. In All the President's Men, of course, was in The Candidate. So and of course him being a big socially conscious, and of course has the Sundance Film Festival. He's very aware of things that are going on in the country. But him playing the Secretary of Defense was kind of fun to see. And it's an underplayed performance as far as screen villains. But yeah, that was fun. That was worth checking out.
Just another guy I'd like to be. Robert Redford.
Robert Redford?
Him and Clint Eastwood. I think to myself, you know, how old is Clint Eastwood? He's like 80.
He's 80. Just don't talk to chairs. Don't talk to empty chairs.
This guy's making best films and whatnot. You know, well, I think to myself, you know, boy, would I like to be that.
You hope you're that productive when you hit his age.
Yeah, to be hitting your stride at that age.
Exactly. Also out on DVD and Blu-ray this week, speaking of, we were talking earlier about The Drop, I also got to see the film called God's Pocket. And this is a film that is one of the final performances from Philip Seymour Hoffman. Not the last one, but because I think the last one is still in theaters right now. But this is
this
a film
the one directed by the guy from
John
Batman?
Slattery. Okay. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
John Slattery directed it. He also co-adapted the screenplay and is one of the producers on it, along with Hoffman. As I put it on Facebook, this is my East Coast angst double feature between The Drop and God's Pocket. It is set in a fictitious neighborhood in Philadelphia. You have Philip Seymour Hoffman, Christina Hendricks, Richard Jenkins, pretty solid cast, and it's John Turturro, and you have, you know what you have, Kobe? You have plot and character things happening. Sometimes at the same time.
That's going on.
Kind of like The Drop, yeah. Hoffman's character, again, speaking of actors who were terrific at playing schlubs, Mr. Hoffman's work there. He's married to Christina Hendricks. Big thumbs up by that, and I don't like
how
saying
she
I don't like
movie.
Saying thumbs up. Oh, she's tremendous.
Well, they make her look so different on Madden,
right?
And she doesn't, yeah.
And by the way, there's the opening of this film is very similar to Philip Seymour Hoffman's opening in the Sidney Lumet film Before the Devil Knows You're Dead. Mm. You know exactly what I'm talking about if you know that film. Way to go, Phil. But he plays a guy who has a business, but there's also some, again, questionable business practices that with him and Turturro. And his stepson is killed at a work accident, or so it seems. And so it's uncovering what happened. And it's Hendrix's character, it's her son, who's determined to find out that the way her son died was not the way the construction company said it happened. Eddie Marsden's in this film as well. I should mention that as a funeral director. But again, this is another atmospheric piece. There are moments where you don't feel like the film is going anywhere. It's going somewhere. Is it a big, dumb action film? No. But I think it's really subtle performances. It shows a kind of extremely, innered section of Philadelphia. I mean, where people don't leave the neighborhood at all. And it does show a little bit of the paranoia of the neighborhood, like The Drop, but everybody knows everybody's business, and everybody knows, hopefully, to stay out of certain people's business.
Well, here's my question I want to interject.
Yeah,
then.
Go right ahead.
Given is that you sound like you like this film.
I did.
It is one of the final performances by one of our greatest actors.
Yes.
Why did this not get any type of release? Because I was aware. Let me just backtrack here. I was at the Sundance Film Festival this year.
Ah,
I had one celebrity run-in.
Really,
with Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Really,
and it was outside of.
What's he doing?
You know, he came out with two people. I was with some friends, and we were waiting for the shuttle. We were at the Canyons Resort. This is kind of a cool mm-hmm. story. I really haven't told too many people. And we come out, and our whole thing was we wanted a picture with a big celebrity.
Sure.
And so he comes out. He had like pajama pants on and a hat, and he looked you know, he disheveled and, you know, but that's kind of how he looks all the time. So anyways, he came out and he wanted to smoke a cigarette. That's why he was out there. And I talked to him briefly, told him I was a film critic. I asked him if we could take a picture with him, and he declined. He said, "It's been a long day." And he said it in the way that he – and I said, "You know what? Still a fan, no worries." And he just kind of smiled. All he was dead 2 days later. All right, this is the point. My question, I'm aware of both of those films. Everybody thought, but I heard very little about them. I haven't seen either one of them. Why did this not get the release that The Drop's getting?
Well, and the thing is, I don't think The Drop's – you know, The Drop's not going to get a thousand screens.
It's getting a lot more push.
It's
well,
it's Fox Searchlight. And, it helps if you're with Fox Searchlight. If I remember, I think check
it's
out
IFC film.
Is IFC? Yeah, well, that's the other. So IFC is smaller than Fox. It's not the most fun film in the world. These are people dealing with the death of a kid. He's not a kid. I mean, well, to Christina Hendricks' character, it's her baby, but he's like a 20-something screw up. I think part of it is that. I think part of it is the pacing and the timing of it. But I think it's a smaller picture. I don't know. I think because what's the name? I know it's out right now that's Hoffman's last film where he's the German spy. And I think that's gotten a little more traction because that was the last picture.
Now, if you had to, and this is just, so if you had to say who did the better performance, God's Pocket, Philip? Or James in The Drop?
Oh, Philip. Philip.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I didn't see that once. All right.
Yeah, no,
so
it's a disheveled character that we kind of expect from Hoffman, but the relationship that he has with the funeral director, and he's trying, his wife, played by Christina Hendricks, picks a very expensive casket, and he's got to find a way to get the money for that, dealing with Eddie Marson. And he's got some nice scenes with John Turturro. And there's just a heartbreaking scene involving a horse race. Yeah. Usually scenes involving horse races, one or two things going to happen. And I think we all know this.
Yeah.
but I think Hoffman's character has more to do in this one compared to Gandolfini's.
Okay.
But, again, if you're up for 4 hours of blue-collar East Coast angst, you're set between The Drop and God's Pocket.
Absolutely.
Shifting Gears is another film out on DVD and Blu-ray this week called Words and Pictures. And it's set in a small private high school, and you have an English teacher and an art teacher. The English teacher, they're both burnt out for different reasons. One is emotionally burnt out. The other is a little more physically burnt out. The English teacher is played by Clive Owen. And the art teacher, who's dealing with an early, an extreme case of arthritis, an arthritic condition, played by Juliette Binoche. And, of course, get ready for this. At the very beginning of the film, they don't like each other.
Hmm.
I know.
No way.
I know. I know, right? But they have a little banter on words. Fortunately, early on, you see, like Benedict and Beatrice, play drop title, you see aspects of that they could be attracted to each other, even though right away he's a little overbearing. She's introverted. She plays a one-time famed New York artist now in this small community. He's a published writer and poet who's just kind of working on fumes over the last few years and a major alcoholic and having issues with his older son. And what begins is kind of a merry war of words, or a debate, I should say, between words and pictures, which stands out more amongst the students. And of course,
No, I'm just giving
thanks,
my
Juliet. but as time goes on, you see how they're able to help one another out. They both hit their own version of a low point.
And this does have something to do with technology, right? A little about how the kids are consuming.
A little bit of that. Okay. There's a couple moments early on where both teachers kind of pull up their black socks and berate their students for not knowing.
Okay.
There was one little moment where I was like, I don't quite believe it. If you're working, I hope I'm wrong, but if you're at a public school. If you're doing an expensive private high school and you're doing an honors English class, you should know what a haiku is. And nobody in the nobody in the classroom knew that. That's kind of like I had this.
Learned that in like junior high.
Exactly. Well, this is a little nitpicky thing. Did you ever see The Perks of Being a Wallflower?
Yes, I love it.
Okay, I love that film too. I have one problem with it. The Emma Watson character knows about the Smiths, knows about Iggy Pop, but didn't know the David Bowie song as they're traveling in the tunnel on the pickup truck. I got a problem with that. Little tiny thing like that.
I appreciate that you noticed that.
That's but nice. Seriously, it's a great song. It's Heroes. Look it up. But it was like, you did not know that was David Bowie in your, anyway. But so there are moments of the teacher obviously working with the students and then also learning something from their quote unquote rival. And I could easily see this being a bigger studio picture with lesser actors and make, because there are times that each character borderlines on Kobe's favorite word, insufferable. But because it's Clive Owen and because it's Juliette Binoche, they bring a little more texture to it. It's and make these characters a little more enjoyable to watch, even though we've kind of seen these stock characters before. The burnt out teacher. So I think it's worth checking out.
Well, here's interesting, Matt. You caught me on a week where I haven't seen any of the Runnels, which is interesting. But no,
well, we got one more title.
No, but here's the thing: is you. It's been nice that I can enjoy listening to your reaction to all these.
You hear this, Cobb?
No, really. But I have a question for you when you're done.
Yes.
Well, when you're done, you got
no.
One
I'm
more.
Done. It's worth. Okay. I think it's worth checking out.
All right. So here's the thing: you talked about three films, very different films.
Yes.
I know this is hard to do sometimes, but you know. I'm going to say, Matt, if you got to give me one to rent this weekend, which are you,
ooh.
You know, and don't tell me, well, which is the best film overall?
Of the three I've mentioned,
yes.
Captain America.
Okay.
I'd say
now,
Captain America.
If I'm renting two and I'm feeling like, you know, I want to spend, 4 hours of my weekend watching movies, which two do I take?
I would say, because I know your household, I would say Captain America, then Words and Pictures.
Okay, so God's Pocket is for dark.
Yeah, I don't know if your fam would be up for popping corn and watching Blue Collar Angst in Philadelphia. Maybe.
If I like The Drop, would I like God's Pocket?
You might.
Okay.
You might.
Right,
There were some critics, I wish I had done it, who compared God's Pocket to films by Sidney Lumet, one of my favorite directors, the guy who did Serpico, and we had mentioned before The Devil Knows You're Dead.
Which is another movie that didn't get a lot of run that I thought was excellent, so maybe I
would
like
this. It was really good. Well, there are times that film is just not pleasant.
Yeah,
well, and granted, it is known for being...
about This Is 40 and...
I hated This Is 40.
And,
don't get me started on This Is 40.
And The 40-Year-Old Virgin. Both of those were very disturbing.
Judd Apatow, thanks. There is one other new film that came out on DVD and Blu-ray this week, and I saw it in theaters, and I asked, did you see Brick Mansions?
No, but I know that's Paul Walker's last film.
I think that is his last completed film. I think
so we have a lot of that theme going on.
I think so. Welcome to, and you know, we don't have dead people we like this week,
I guess we make up for it. I did give away tickets for that one.
Did
I remember
you?
On my site, but I did not see
this
it. It's not something I really wanted to see, I got to be honest.
It's kind of a remake, I think,
Wu-Tang Clang's in it, right?
The RZA. But it's set in, guess what? It's set in Detroit
because
you know what? Dilapidated Detroit because we didn't get enough of that from RoboCop earlier this year. Oh, but yeah, it's a crime story that I think it is a remake of Region B-13. I hope I'm saying that right. It was the French martial arts action film that Luc Besson produced.
If you're not saying it right, I don't think most people would know.
Well, they should know. It's NPR. But yeah, it's Paul Walker's, I think, last completed film. And nothing serious to write home about. I mean, the action sequences are okay.
It's interesting. It's a violent film. It's only PG-13, which is...
Well, that's kind of... Well, it's like... Kobe's other favorite, PG-13 thrillers. Is that like sugar-free ice cream? PG-13 action movies too.
All right, so I'm going to show my RZA. That's how I always.
The RZA.
It's RZA.
Oh yeah,
okay.
Right. Because Kobe, my Wu-Tang correspondent.
Yes, I believe the correct
pronunciation.
Okay, now listen.
Is
this is
RZA.
Where you learn stuff. I'm being educated here, and I've been aware of this band for a long time. And whenever I see his name, I say RZA. So there we go. Thank you.
You could actually, RZA. People right. could think it's your own spin on it.
It's one of the big things on TV is getting a name wrong. I'd get all, you know, it's embarrassed, but you know, there's different ways to say things.
Don't worry. I once said Van Diesel on Fox many, many moons ago
Diesel.
But, Kobe, it's like when I refer to our favorite academic as David.
Oh yeah.
Dr. Baker. But another thing I saw, there's a site I go to for new DVD and Blu-ray titles, and I'm kind of stunned that this was on here. So I'm hoping either they just re-released it or I'm kind of surprised if it's just coming out on Blu-ray finally, but it was one of my favorite films of last year with one of my favorite performances from last year, Alexander Payne's Nebraska with Bruce Dern, who I really, really wish had won Best Actor. But
That's just it.
It feels weird, but yeah. It was on this list. So this website who
I think that's possible. I mean, here's the thing. I couldn't disagree with you more. I love Alexander Payne, and I did not like
Nebraska. You did not like Nebraska.
And I thought Bruce Dern just played a guy his age, and I was not as impressed as you.
Really?
I was, in fact, very disappointed. I love every film he's ever made. Like, my favorite films of the year were always his films.
Okay.
So I was very let down, and I didn't like the guy from Saturday Night Live.
Will Forte? Like, yeah. I thought he was fine.
No, I mean, it's just, you know, but it's interesting you bring that up, because, you know, I had that screener, you know, because that was
right.
One of the, and, you know, people would say, hey, what about that? And I'd say, you know what? No, I'm not, you don't want to see it. And I was right most of the time. I mean, it takes a certain person to like that film. I don't know.
It happens. What did you like about it? Really dug Bruce Dern. And I think this is a film that he couldn't have done 5 years ago, 10 years ago. It's kind of like, I think, the similar story of Unforgiven, where Eastwood got the script and he's like, call me in 10 years. But I think it's taking the craggly old coot and adding a little bit to it. There's not a clean connection between he and his son, and he and his wife, played by June Squibb, who also got a nomination, who's also a lot of fun. But you know, just a guy determined to get this one thing. I guess I'm partial to this is the last thing that this guy in his life wants, even if his son knows it's a sham. But he's determined to have this one final request met, and that's why I think the ending,
when we
find out that, you know, when Bruce Dern's character finds out what actually happens, it's heartbreaking. But along the way, he doesn't get his $1 million, but he gets time with his son, and it is rectified, but not in a multiplex kind of way. Are they going to go have ice cream the next day? No. But they finally got one last, and Alexander Payne's known for his road trip movies.
Yep.
You know, films like Sideways and to a lesser degree, I guess, Citizen Ruth.
But, you know, this movie was different is that
about
being patient, you know, for a payoff. Although there is a payoff, I didn't feel that it was worth the patience. And like, you know, just for my own, like, you know, and Stacey,
hey, dude, I think we got a new soundbite.
That was good. I don't think it was worth the patience.
Yeah, and Stacey Keach, I believe, was in there. I thought he was overly ridiculous. For me, I really wanted to like it, and I tried hard as I watched it to like it, and I just didn't like
that,
it.
That is something I've heard a few people write about is they were with it until the yokels show up.
Yes.
When get to the small
right,
town
yeah.
with all the and there's a scene where all the guys hopefully we're not like this in 30 years where all the guys are watching football and drinking beer and not saying a damn thing, or if they are, it's about an old car and it's about the weather.
Right. No, I hope not. I can tell you, coming off a guy's trip at 43, things are still fun.
But not this is 43.
No, but anyways, Nebraska's for a certain type
all right.
of film goer. You got to be, you got to want something different, and you got to want something to challenge you to rent that.
And I loved it.
Yeah,
a few old titles. We just got a few minutes. A few old titles that are out on Blu-ray this week, and I think this is one. I guess it's the 40th anniversary, but I think you must purchase it. Young Frankenstein. Funny stuff from Mel Brooks.
I don't know if that would hold up with the younger generation, to be honest.
My daughter disagrees.
Okay, no. I've that's one of those ones with my kids
How old are your kids again?
13 and 11.
Give it a shot. It's 90 minutes out of their life. Now, of course, for them, it's 90 minutes out of my life.
There's a fine line. Spaceballs, love it.
Really?
But you go to the older Mel Brooks, they something over their head.
Oh,
geez,
gotta work
so,
on that. Also out on Blu-ray this week, Juggernaut, disaster movie with Richard Harris, directed by Richard Lester. Kobe, I'm very excited. We here at Film Sociology know these titles. I need these on Blu-ray because they are, of course, visual wonders. The Ozzie Davis directed Cotton Comes to Harlem with Raymond St. Jacques and Godfrey Cambridge, and on Blu-ray, Across 110th Street. Yaphet Kotto, Anthony Quinn, great score by Indianapolis jazz great J.J. Johnson, title track sung by the late, great Bobby Womack.
Yes.
Which was used brilliantly in Quentin
song.
Tarantino's Jackie Brown. This is the original. That's where
that
came from, right? and of course, as we said earlier, the Marvin Gaye song Trouble Man from his brilliant soundtrack, Trouble Man, is used in Captain America. So I think we've got a big chunk of the film sociology soundtrack taken care of in this week's show.
Oh, what a great pledge item that would be.
The rights for the songs would be paying, though.
Yeah.
That means dealing with Berry Gordy.
Yeah, I'll burn it for you.
No, we're not doing that. Ladies and gentlemen, we have some words to live by.
Yes, we do.
Here's some
Silent
words to live by.
British people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Speaking of trouble, man, that's T Plays It Cool. Mark, markdubeck.com. Go check out his stuff.
Thank you for having me here.
I really appreciate you coming in. Yeah. Give my best to the family.
All right. Thanks, guys.
And go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Go Lions. And go Tigers.
We go. Good night, California. Good night, Fort Myers. We'll see you soon.